Side 8, Lord Brocktree, by Brian Jakes. Continuing on page 312. General laughter greeted Girth's good mole logic. Gren had food brought out by the Gwasim, Drucko's rabble hogs lending a paw. It was late afternoon by the time Brocktree finished outlining his plan, which was wholeheartedly approved. Bucko winked admiringly at the badger.
I ken knew why badger lairds are braw canny beasts.
Brocktree's fierce dark eyes looked appraisingly around. Every beast here has their own special part to play. I know 'tis a perilous and risky scheme, but I think it'll work. So, are you with me? Hold up your paws, all in favor. Not one creature held back. Every paw went up. Skittles held up all four paws, lying flat on his back.
Us with you, Buck, mate.
The difficult part was explaining to Frutch and the very old ones, who would be remaining behind, hidden in the supply cave. Brogalaw tried to placate his weeping mother.
Hush now, Mom. We'll take that old mountain quicker and you can say Naomi Rutter. You can have a nice little room there, all of your own, and a rock garden, too. You always wanted a rock garden, didn't you, me old darling?
But Frutch was not to be consoled.
Go and do what you gotta do, Brogalaw, but come back alive to me, you great tail-whacking lump. Never mind trying to get around me with mountain caves and rock gardens. When this is all over, I don't want none of it. Tell you what I would like, though, to go back down South Coast to our old home. Oh, I do miss it.
Blanche loaned Frutch a corner of her apron to weep into. The old cook patted Brog's paw.
We'll take good care of your mum, Brog. You get going now. Get our mountain back for us. Fates and seasons of fortune go with you. Oh, and keep an eye out for that niece of mine. Dorothy is a brave hare, but young and headstrong.
Brog gave the old cook a hug.
Bless your heart, marm. I'll do me best for us all. You got my word. Stay safe now and don't weep too much. It makes the bread soggy.
On the way out of the cave, Brog stopped to stroke the heron's long neck and speak softly to the bird.
You stay here now, my old matey. Take good care of these old uns, and don't stay out fishing too long. I'll see you when 'tis all done, I hope.
Rulango laid his beak on Brog's shoulder and blinked, and the sea otter skipper patted him roughly.
Come on now, you old rogue. Don't start getting soft on me.
Brogalaw did quite a bit of blinking himself. Then he straightened up, sniffed loudly, and left the cave. A great pile of wood, sea coal, and grass had been heaped not far from the front of the old cave. Every beast was gathered there when Brog arrived.
All ready, Brock. I've just been making me farewells to Mum and the old uns.
Dottie clapped a paw to her mouth.
Aunt Blanche! I forgot to say goodbye to her.
Brog shouldered his javelin.
I already did that, Missy. She said that you got to take good care of me. Little Skittles was sleeping, and Merkel Ward is staying back to keep an eye on things. There ain't a thing to keep us now, so let's be about our work.
Lord Brocktree turned to Juka the Sling. No beast would have recognized her from the disguise she wore. The squirrel chieftain had been dyed blue. Her tail was shaven, and she wore a horde beast's uniform. Brocktree nodded approvingly.
You look like a true vermin, friend. Now, you know what you have to do?
Aye, Lord. As soon as the blue bottoms leave the mountain, I will shoot a burning shaft from one of the high windows.
Brocktree clasped Juka's paw.
Good luck.
Huh! And try not to plunder anything until we get there!
Juka eyed Fleetscut coldly.
When 'tis all over, thou and I will have a reckoning.
Then she turned and hurried off toward Salamandastron. Ruff shook his head in disapproval at Fleetscut.
It's not good to go into battle with bad blood twixt you two. Right, who's next to go, mates?
Derby and Conal stepped forward with their crew. Strapped to each one's back was a torch, wrapped tightly to protect it from the seawater. Brog issued final instructions.
Don't start anything until you see this fire in front of the cave lit and blazing well. Fortune go with you, mates.
The sea otters slipped silently off seaward. Grocktree looked around at those left and took Ruff's paw.
Your turn now, friend. You and Brog look after yourselves.
And you do likewise, Lord Brocktree of Brockall.
Dottie and Logalog Gren stood watching as Brog and Ruff led the squirrels and rabble hogs off into the gathering evening. They climbed the cliffs and began a long sweep south.
Ah, well, chaps, that leaves only us now, what?
Dottie observed. Bucko Big Bones exposed his teeth in a wide grin.
Aye, lassie, so whittin' the name of seasons are we hangin' a boot for. Let's be away, ma bairns.
Brocktree's hefty paw descended on Bucko's shoulder. You stay close to me, sir, and none of your mad march mountain hare antics out of you, understand? Bucko checked the six long daggers he had thrust in his belt.
Ach, I'll be as quiet as a wee mole, babe. Eh, Girth?
I'm open he will, sir. I were a good hinfant myself.
Stiffener led the little army off through the dunes.
We'll get up as close to the tunnel afore dark as we can.
Dottie fell in between Southpaw and Bobweave, who were simultaneously loading their slings.
Splendid evening for a jolly old war, eh, Miss Dottie? Rather. I say, do you want me to load your sling, Miss Dottie? Tut-tut, old chap. I'm the sling loader around here, you know.
The hair maid rescued her sling from the irrepressible twins.
Oh, give it a rest, you two. I'm perfectly capable of loading me own bloomin' sling. Besides, Mother always told me to beware of sling-loading types. Wise old mater, what? Pretty, too, if she looks anything like her daughter.
At a gruff cough from the Badger Lord, they fell silent. Darkening clouds merged with dusky sky overhead, and the last crimson sun rays shimmered over the horizon, flaring briefly across the waves. A warm, vagrant breeze stirred grass on the dune tops. Night fell, with moon shadows transforming the landscape into a patchwork of silver sand and velvet shadow. Dottie could scarce suppress a shudder of excitement and apprehension. The battle to win back Salamandastron had finally begun.
33.
Ungat Trun paced the mountain passages like a caged beast, agitated and impatient. Everywhere he went, guards stood stiffly to attention in the torch-lit corridors, holding their breath as he prowled by, his long cloak swishing. From the top level of the inner mountain he went, through every floor to the bottom. Only the sound of restless waves greeted the wildcat as he emerged, past the sentries, out onto the shore. Two sea rats rowed a small gig into the shallows. Leaping out, they dragged it ashore. Captain and Chief Corangul stepped onto the beach.
Mightness, he's quiet this night.
Ungat Trun stroked his whiskers slowly.
Too quiet, altogether. I don't like it, Captain. 'Tis as if something is waiting to happen. Can you feel it, too?
Yeah, Mightness.
Together they strolled back to the main mountain entrance. Patrols had been doubled around the perimeter, and six guards, with Rip Fang at their head, marched around from the north side. They halted, saluting Trun with their spears. He nodded to Rip Fang.
Anything to report, Captain?
Nary a thing, sir. 'Tis like walking round a burying ground out there, but we're keeping a sharp lookout.
Fregorl interrupted further conversation. She'd hurried out of the main entrance, her dark cloak flapping like a bird of ill omen. She pointed.
Mighty one, over there, by the cliffside, northward. I saw it from my window. A fire!
With Fregorl, Rip Fang, and Corangul scurrying in his wake, Trun raced inside, taking stair flights in leaps and bounds. He was breathing heavily by the time he reached the highest level. Vaulting through a frameless window space, the wildcat made his way to the high guard post. A ferret stood pointing his spear to the fire.
There, sire!
Even from that distance, the blaze was visible, lighting up the cliffside with an orange glow. The others arrived behind Trun. He heard Rip Fang chuckle and whirled on him.
Something appears to be amusing you, sea rat.
Rip Fang indicated a distant bonfire.
You got to admit it. Ain't short of nerve. Ha! Supposed to be hiding out from you, sir. And there they be, burning a whopper campfire. Aye, and I'll wager they're cooking, too, stuffing their gobs with food they stole off us. Ho ho, even that ain't a sight to see.
Karangul watched the wildcat's paws shaking with anger.
Mightness, it could be trap.
Ungat Trun grabbed him so hard that his claws sank into the fox's paw. The captain and chief winced as the wildcat sneered scathingly.
Do you think I don't know that, imbecile? The insolence of those creatures, taunting Ungat Trun like that.
Rip Fang cleaned his single tooth with a grimy paw.
Aye, that's what 'tis, a taunt. Plain open defiance, like my old cap'n used to say. But what are you going to do about it? That's the question, sir.
Karangul, take half of the entire hordes. Split them in three columns. One either side, cliff tops and dunes, the third to go flat out along the shore and circle round behind them. I want the leaders alive. The rest must be slaughtered. Bring their bodies back with you.
Shouting broke out from a sentry post facing the sea.
Fire! Fire aboard the ships!
Out at the western edge of the vast armada, flames could be seen licking around sails and rigging. Ungat Trun looked from one conflagration to the other.
It wasn't a trap. It was a decoy to divert our attention. Well, I'm going to turn it into a trap. Karangul, take some crews out there. Cut the burning vessels away from the others. Save the fleet. Fregorl, Rip Fang, you will take command of those attacking the decoy fire by the cliffs. You heard my orders to Karangul. Go and carry them out.
Ungat Trun went inside and beckoned the first creature he came across, a guard in the upper passages.
You, gather together my captains. Bring them to my chamber.
In an instant, the quiet of the summer night was shattered. Horde captains dashed about, bellowing orders, the entire mountain bursting into a hive of activity. Ungat Trun met the group of captains in the doorway of his chamber. He marched them out into the corridor and issued hasty instructions.
I am taking over the defense of my mountain against any outside attack. Listen to me. Bar all entrances. That includes the window spaces and any paths going up the mountain. You six, take your patrols, bring in all outside sentries, repel any assaults from ground level. You four, spread your creatures about in the passages. Watch out for enemy beasts trying to break in. I'll take the top levels. Send me up 100 or more troops.
Rulango returned to the new cave, minus the lighted torch he had been carrying in his beak. Crutch made sure the entrance was well camouflaged before she accompanied the big heron back inside.
Did the fire light well when you dropped the torch on it?
Rulango ruffled his feathers, spread both wings, and did an odd hopping dance, nodding his beak. The otter mom smiled.
You're a good bird. See, I baked some slices for you. Slicer for Skickles, too, eh, Fudge? Bless your little heart. Of course there is, my lovey.
Stiffener winked at Brocktree.
Nicely timed, sire. We won't even wet our paws. The tide slipped out nice and quiet. Get the lanterns ready and follow me. Best be quiet, though. It echoes loud in there.
Dottie and the twins rounded the rock point to see Stiffener holding back a jumble of kelp and seaweed with his javelin.
Come on, you young rips, in you go. We ain't got all night.
They entered the tunnel by which Stiffener and the prisoners had escaped. Southpaw lit their lantern from Girth's torch.
I'll be official lantern bearer for you, Miss Dottie, what?
To forestall further argument, the hair maid agreed.
Right, you do that, Southpaw. Bob Weave here, you can be the official sling holder. I say, it's jolly damp and gloomy in here. Spooky, too.
Eek! What's that?
Brocktree pushed in ahead of them, covering Dottie's mouth with a huge paw as he investigated the grisly object. Still partially clad in tattered rags of a uniform, the skeleton of Captain Frawl gleamed white in the lantern light. The eye sockets of the skull remained fixed in a ghastly mask of death. Tiny, spike-backed crabs scuttled hither and thither over the vermin's bare bones, seeking any semblance of a gruesome meal. The badger lord shifted the skeleton to one side with a sweep of his footpaw, and little crabs scuttled everywhere, holding their nippers aggressively high. Brocktree took his paw from Dottie's mouth. Nothing to be feared of, miss. Looks like the skeleton of a stoat, if I'm not mistaken. Wonder how he got down here. Stiffener viewed the remains dispassionately.
Who knows? One vermin less to deal with, I say. It's those crabs we got to worry about, Lord. There's lots and lots of the confounded beasts down here. Pretty big ones, too.
Bucko saw the long, stalked eyes, watching them from every crack and crevice. He thrust a torch at them and made them scuttle from its flame.
Doc, they'll be no bother to us. We got fire, lots of it. I think, Frey, what you were telling us, Stiff. 'Tis only the high tide a-rushing up here which disturbs them.
The mountain hare was right. In the absence of waves crashing into the tunnel, the crabs kept to the wall sides. There was room enough for every beast to proceed in single file. It was a long, hard trek, though. Sometimes they had to bend almost double in the confined rock tunnel. Brocktree had to wriggle along flat on his stomach. Though they had only been going a few hours, it felt like days. Fleet Scott patted his stomach.
I say, you chaps, how's about stopping for a morsel, a jolly old supper? I'm fair famished, what? You stay famished and let young Dottie stay fair,
Stiffener called back.
We'll be in the cave soon enough. Then you can eat supper.
After an interminable age of groping along through the damp, rocky spaces, the boxing hare halted.
Sailors, Troby, bring those ropes here, will you?
Brocktree peered through the hole at the eerie, blue-lit cavern beneath, with its stalactites, stalagmites, bottomless pool, and echoing water drips. Dottie pushed through. She measured the hole's diameter with both paws, then tried to gauge the badger lord's burly width.
Afraid you won't fit through that hole, sir.
Brocktree unshouldered his sword.
Seems you're right, miss.
Stand clear, please.
He brought the sword point down hard a few times around the hole's edge, knocking out large cobs of the veined limestone. They crashed down into the cave, some into the pool. Blue, wavery reflections of moving water gave the badger's face a spectral, fearsome appearance.
Hope no beast heard those stones falling. There. I'll fit through the hole smoothly enough, eh, Gert?
You mavy Gert way of solving problems, sir.
They did not have to climb down the ropes. Lord Brocktree stayed on top and lowered them four at a time, two to each rope. When they were all down, he lowered himself gingerly, using both ropes.
There now, that wasn't too bad. Let's rest a while and eat.
Gren's guasim cooks had brought along some supplies, which they ate sitting around the pool. Brocktree hardly touched his food, but sat staring intently into the green-blue translucent depths. Gren swigged from a flask of dark damson wine, watching the badger.
So what are you thinking of, sire?
Brocktree continued scanning the water. My father Stonepaw died in this cave, a hero's death, to enable his followers to escape. Gren nodded sympathetically. She uncorked another flask of the wine and tossed it into the center of the pool. Being filled to the top, it sank into the depths, sending up a tracery of dark purplish wine, like smoke from an oily fire on a windless day.
There.
That'll let your old dad know you've come to the mountain to take vengeance for him.
They all watched the bottle until it was lost to sight in the fathomless depths, leaving only a long, solitary spiral of dark, damson wine. Brocktree stood up, dry-eyed.
Thank you for that, Logalog Gren.
Stiffener, will you lead off?
I'm completely lost down here.
The boxing hare scratched his ears.
I ain't too familiar with Salamandastron's cellars either, sire. We only stumbled on this place by accident when we were running for our lives.
The ever-optimistic Dottie volunteered a suggestion.
I don't suppose it'll be that difficult to find her way out of here, what? And I'll bet once Juka has fired off her signal arrow, she'll come looking for us. She should have a pretty fair idea of the place, having to find her way in and whatnot.
Bucko picked up his torch and joined Stiffener.
Good thinking, lassie. I don't fancy hanging about this place. It makes my back preckle. Let's be away.
Juka's heart had been pounding as she approached the main gates. Standing, almost barring the way, was a group of vermin who looked different from the usual hordes, and the wildcat, who was obviously Ungat Trun. Keeping her eyes straight ahead, the squirrel, hoping fervently that her disguise would not be noticed, strode boldly forward. She passed them, as if she were carrying on with some chore or other which was keeping her busy, and breathed a sigh of relief as she made the main entrance. Next moment, she was almost bowled over by a hooded and cloaked ferret, who dashed out and accosted Trun and the others.
"Mighty one, over there, by the cliffside, northward. I saw it from my window. A fire."
Juka pulled to one side as the wildcat came bounding past, with the rest trying to keep up with him. No beast would dare challenge me in such company, thought Juka. She tagged on and joined the rear of the party. When Ungat Trun reached the high-level guard post, Juka followed. However, she stayed almost hidden against the mountainside, keeping in the background as much as possible. Juka saw the flames from both fires and watched Trun giving out his commands to Ripfang, Frigoro, and the tall, saturnine fox called Karangul. When the vermin had departed hurriedly, Juka ventured out. There were three lookout guards still at the post, a ferret and two rats. The ferret was obviously the most senior of the three. He eyed Juka suspiciously, pointing at her with his spear.
"Oi! What are you doing around here?"
The squirrel knew her disguise had him fooled. She decided to brazen it out and spat on the ground in true vermin fashion.
"Ain't doing anything. What are you doing?"
The ferret was taken aback at her insolence.
"What am I doing? I'm the night watch in charge of this here lookout post, appointed by Cap'n Drool."
Juka made as if to stroll away, but one of the rats barred her way with his spear haft.
"I ain't seen you afore."
Juka sneered back at him.
"And I ain't seen you, or I'd remember your ugly face. Now get that spear out of me way."
The rat's courage failed him when he saw the dangerous gleam in Juka's eyes, and he allowed her to knock his spear aside. Accompanied by the other rat, the ferret stepped in. They menaced Juka with their spear points. Slightly unsure of himself, the ferret adopted an officious tone.
"You've got no business being up here. Who sent you?"
"Ungat Trun did. And stand to attention when you speaks to me. The Mighty One was right. Things are getting far too sloppy round these lookout posts."
Shooting the two rats a warning glance, the ferret came to attention, the rats speedily following his example. Juka was beginning to enjoy herself. She circled the trio, inspecting them critically, while she pounded her brain in an effort to think how she could rid herself of them. Juka needed to be at the high guard post to fire off her signal arrow. She saw the ferret's throat bob nervously. She nodded understandingly and flashed him a brief smile.
"I'm only doing me job. Same as you, mate. Let's take a look at your spear a moment. Trun's orders, you know. At ease."
The trio stood easy, the ferret passing over his spear for inspection. Juka studied it closely.
Pole's a bit splintery. Could do with a polish, too. When was the last time you sharpened the blade?"
Some of the starch had gone out of the ferret.
3 days back, I think. Or maybe 4, he muttered.
Juka pursed her lips critically and shook her head at him.
"This spearhead ain't been sharpened in a season. Do you know it's come loose? Could do with a new nail. Look."
She waggled the spear haft, holding tight to the head. A rusty nail was all that held them together, and it soon snapped, leaving Juka holding the haft in one paw and the head in her other. She raised her eyebrows knowingly.
"See what I mean, matey? Ah, but don't fret. I won't report you. You know, sometimes a spear pole with no blade can be a useful weapon. I'll show you. You two rats, put down those spears and stand either side of your officer here."
The sentries decided that this strange-looking inspector was not such a bad type. They obeyed, letting Juka shove them about until she had them in the required position, outside the guard post, with their backs to the edge of the mountainside. There was a dizzying drop behind them. Juka threw away the spearhead and held the pole sideways.
"When I did me spear training, my old cap'n showed me this trick with a spear pole. Watch and pay attention now, mates."
The pole moved in a blur. Whack, thwack, whack. 3 stunning blows, one to the side of each rat's head and the last to the ferret, the pole butt hitting between the eyes. Without a sound, the 3 guards fell backward over the edge. It was a long way down. Juka checked that the little fire was lit in the guard post and laid out bow and quiver, selecting the shaft with the oil-soaked rags bound to its point. Sounds drifted up from below. She peered down. Vermin came flooding out of the main gates and from the shores round about. They marched off at double speed in 3 groups, with Fregorl, Ripbang, and Dumai at the head of the columns. Karangul exited next, followed by every ship's crew that was on shore leave, dashing toward the fleet. Then Juka saw the mountain perimeter guards hasten inside. She heard the main entrance doors slam shut and captains yelling for the windows to be barred. At last all became quiet, and the shores in front of the mountain lay deserted. Touching the arrowhead to the fire, she waited a moment until it was blazing well. Then, fitting the shaft to her bowstring, Juka turned south and fired off over the mountaintop. Waiting on the tide line, not too far south of Salamandastron, Brog and Ruff stood at the head of their small army. The sea otter Skipper was first to see the signal arrow, arcing through the night sky like a tiny comet. He pounded Ruff's back.
"There she goes, mate! Right on time!"
Ruff's answer was to throw back his head and howl.
"Eulalia!"
They thundered along the shoreline, paws pounding the damp sand, weapons waving, a wild, fearless band, giving out the challenge to any beast daring to oppose them.
"Blood and vinegar! Eulalia!"
It was only a short distance. Inside the mountain, a weasel horde beast heard the war cries. Moving aside a slat of driftwood from a ground-level window space, he peered out and was immediately cut down by a slingstone. The rat Captain Drull leapt aside as a javelin clattered through. Grabbing the driftwood, he closed the space, shoring it up with a slain weasel and shouting,
"Stand to! We're under attack! Get to the arrow slits!"
A bewildered stoat confronted Drull.
"But, Cap'n, we blocked up the arrow slits. You told us to."
Drull booted him to one side and drew his sword.
"No, I never. Get to the main gate and stand fast. That's where they'll try to break through. Shift yourself."
Juka climbed back inside the mountain and began making her way down to the cellars. She was still on the highest level, racing along a passageway, when she ran slap-bang into Ungat Trun. They fell headlong, both tripped by the wildcat's trident haft, down a short flight of stairs. Juka landed on top, extricating herself from Trun's cloak folds and mumbling hasty apologies. Momentarily forgetting herself, Juka fell into her natural speech.
"I beg thy pardon, sire. Art thou injured, pray?"
Ungat Trun scrambled to get upright, locking eyes with her.
"You're no horde beast, I can tell. Come here."
Juka did the only thing she could do in the circumstances. She leapt over the wildcat and ran for it. Trun was speedily up and after her, calling for assistance.
"Guards! Stop that creature! She's a spy! Stop her!"
Juka took a sharp left along a corridor which branched off 2 ways and jammed herself into a darkened niche as Captain Drull and a mob of guards raced by. Drull came to a forced halt as he turned the corner, and the wildcat grabbed him.
"Where's this spy? Did you see which way that spy went?"
Ignoring the question, Drull babbled into Trun's face.
"Attack, sire! We're being attacked! They're all over the shore outside! They're attacking us!"
Ungat Trun shook the unfortunate rat mercilessly.
"I'll go and see to the attack. You take these with you and find that spy. There must be others inside my mountain. Don't stand there dithering. Catch the spy!"
Juka saw the wildcat race down the opposite arm of the corridor and waited until he was out of sight before she emerged. Drull came skidding around the corner at the head of a large mob of vermin, almost face to face with her.
"That's the spy! Hey, you! Halt! Stop, I say!"
But Juka was not about to stop or halt. She went off down the passage with the vermin pack hard on her heels. 34. Dottie blinked. Lights shimmered in her vision each time she closed her eyes, and she stumbled against Southpaw. He gallantly held her upright. Steady on, Miss Dottie. Here, take my paw. The hair maid was glad of his assistance.
Whew! We've been blundering round in the gloom down here for absolutely ages. Those lights are making my eyes go all funny. Do you suppose we're lost?
Good grief. I jolly well hope not, eh, Bob?
What? Lost?
I don't know, but it looks like we could be, old chap. I think this is the second blinking time I've passed this rock. It's shaped like a salad bowl. I've come to know it rather well, what?
Brocktree held up his torch, illuminating the rock in question.
Is he right, Stiffener? Are we lost?
The boxing hare's ears drooped in shame.
I hate to say it, Lord, but I'm afeard we are.
A groan rose from those who had been following him.
Lost? You mean we've been traipsing round here for hours and hours only to get lost? Bit of a blinking frost, if you ask me, old lad.
You're Stiff done a good job, I reckon. Us'n's nearly there, hurray.
The Badger Lord sounded hopeful. What makes you think so, Girth? The good mole wet his digging claws by licking them and held them up as high as he could.
"'Cause I be's feeling the fresh hur from above, sir. Tizzy thing us moles do be a-knowin' about.'
Bucko, who hated the dark, congratulated Girth.
"'Ach, good fer ye, my braw laddie. Lead on!'
Fleetscott chortled aloud.
"'Well, twoggle my paws, the old salad bowl! I remember that when I used to pinch puddings and come down here to eat 'em when I was only a young'un.'
Sailors chuckled dryly.
And that must have been only last season. I recall Cook Blench complaining about a lot of missing victuals, you lanky-shanked puddin' purloiner.
But Fleetscott was not listening. He was away, helter-skelter, down the rock tunnels, his cries echoing into the distance.
Ha ha! Salad bowl, of course! Can't fool old Fleety. I know me flippin' way out. Of course I jolly well do.
Dottie started to run after him, but Girth stopped her.
"'He won't catch Zer Fleet, missy. You follow Girth. I'll get us and safe out, trust oi.'
Brocktree smiled at the stolid, reliable mole. "'Friend Girth, I'd sooner trust you than a cartload of Fleetscott's. We'll follow faithfully wherever you lead.' Fleetscott halted for an instant to regain his breath, not too sure if he was on the right path.
"'I say, you lot! Where they gone?'
"'Oh, never mind. Now, was it this way or that? Oh, corks, I'm starving. Hope those blue bottoms have left a morsel in the larder for supper, or maybe tea. Huh, it could be blinkin' brekkie time for all a chap had know down this confounded hole. Hello, is that them coming from the other way? That must have been travelin' in circles, what?'
The sounds Fleetscott was hearing drew nearer, but they did not resemble any noises his friends would make.
"'Come on, we've nearly got the spy!
Catch the spy! Stop that spy!'
It was one long passage, with no exits left or right. Fleetscott looked rather nonplussed as Juka came padding up out of the gloom and held up his torch.
"'Oh, it's only you! Stolen any good weapons lately, what?'
Juka collapsed beside him, words pouring out of her.
"'Right behind me! A load of vermin, coming fast! Where are thy friends? Are they not with thee?'
"'No, they're back a ways. Should imagine they'll be along in a while.'
He caught sight of the yelling mob of vermin racing up the tunnel.
"'Great seasons! There'll be murder if they clash with our lot. We weren't expecting anything like this.'
Juka grabbed him savagely.
"'No time for explanations now, Longears. Hast thou weapons? We must hold them here, thee and me.'
The enormity of it dawned upon Fleetscott. He snapped his javelin in half and brandished the torch.
"'We'll have to stop 'em. Here, take this.
Eulalia!' Holding a half of the double-pointed javelin apiece, they charged forward. Both creatures threw themselves at the vermin mob in the narrowest part of the tunnel. The move took the horde beast completely by surprise. Battering away with the lighted torch and thrusting with his piece of javelin, Fleetscott battled side by side with Juka. They gave no quarter and stood their ground, fighting like a pair of mad beasts, yelling when their javelins found marks and gasping with pain when vermin blades found theirs. Further down the tunnel, Sailors held up a paw for silence.
"'What was that, sir?
Did you hear it?
Brocktree was already rushing by her, his blade drawn.
Battle ahead! Eulalia!
They thundered along the tunnel and hit the vermin like a tidal wave. The awesome Brocktree went straight through the horde beasts, his sword scything a harvest of death. Dottie had hardly a chance to whirl her sling. Bucko shoved her to one side as he went in like a battering ram.
Hoot my way, lassie! Yer-ah-ha! I'm the mad March Hare Frey the Mountains. Tack your last look at me, ye vermin!
Skulls cracked against rock as Stiffener Medic and his two grandsons went in weaponless, punching and kicking. Dottie staggered upright, ducking again as a rat went sailing over her head. Girth placed her politely out of his way.
Stanny aside, miss, lest he get you dress must.
Sailors hugged Dottie to her.
Don't look. We should never have brought a maid to this place. Turn your face away, Dottie. 'Twill soon be done.
It was done in a frighteningly short time. No vermin was allowed to escape and raise the alarm. Treading carefully, sailors led Dottie forward, clear of the carnage. On the other side of the battleground, Bucko was waiting for them. He stood up from the two forms he had been crouching over, Juka and Fleetscut. The mountain hare wedged a torch into the rocks above them. As she knelt by their side, Dottie could see that Juka was already dead. Fleetscut had tight hold of the squirrel's paw. His eyes flickered briefly. He was whispering something, and Dottie had to put her face close to his before she realized that the old hare was talking to Juka.
Held a tunnel. They never passed. Lots of weapons for you, my friend. Odd, though. Don't feel a bit hungry. Jolly cold, what?
Fleetscut smiled at Dottie. His eyelids flickered one last time, and then they closed forever. The hare maid looked at Sailors through a shimmering haze of tears.
They died as friends. Who'd have thought it?
The older hare helped her upright.
Juka and Fleetscut were the bravest of the brave. Come now, young'un, let them share the long sleep together.
Ungat Trun felt the cold paw of fear traversing his spine. With no more than 100 vermin at his command, he stood facing the barred main entrance. Rocks and boulders thudded noisily against the fortified oaken doors. Without his vast hordes, the wildcat was virtually a captive inside the mountain he had captured. There were roars of derision from outside.
"We're coming to get you, Trun! Is that the earth shaking, or is it your paws trembling? Bring up the battering ram. I'm tired of knocking on this door, mates. Let's knock it down."
There was no aperture uncovered for the vermin to see what was going on or to retaliate from. Horde beasts stood grouped in the entrance hall, staring in horrified fascination at the reverberating doors. Stoat Captain Bile looked beseechingly to Ungat Trun.
"They're bringing a battering ram. Did you hear 'em, sire? Where's Drawl and the others got to? We'll be slain!"
A blow from the wildcat's trident shaft knocked Bile flat. Trun aimed a kick at the cringing captain.
"Get up, you whimpering worm.
Find Captain Drawl and his sentries. Bring them here immediately."
Bile scurried off to do his master's bidding. Brog looked quizzically at Ruff as they both flung rocks at the doors.
"We never brought no battering ram with us, mate."
Ruff hurled a lump of limestone. It made a satisfying thud.
"Har! But Trun don't know that, do he? We'll need those doors in one piece once we're inside. Remember, Brog, our job's to provide a diversion. Make as much ullabaloo as possible till Brock and our pals can find their way to the doors and ambush Trun from the rear, inside. Look out!"
Ruff pulled Brog to one side as a gang of rabble hogs loosed their slings. Pebbles rattled against oak like a spring hailstorm. Baron Drucko yelled encouragement.
"Now give 'em a few yells, my hogs. Tell those vermints what we're going to do to 'em."
"Yeah, you blue-bottomed whifflers, we'll spike yer. You can't get away from the rabble hogs. We've thrown an accordion round your mountain, so there."
Brog and Ruff joined in with gusto.
"Chop your heads off and chuck 'em in your faces, we will.
Set lights to your tails and use them for candles, too. Aye, we'll make the stars fall on you, all right. The moon, too.
On the other side of the door, Ungat Trun paced nervously about, waiting for Bile to return with the reinforcements he had sent in to get.
Stand your ground.
The wildcat rapped sternly at his quivering vermin.
The doors will hold. This trident will take the eyes out of any beast who moves without my permission.
Trun spied Bile. The stoat captain was dithering around at the hall entrance as if unsure of which way to go next. Dashing down the hall, the wildcat cornered him.
Where's Drawl and the guard patrols? I ordered you to bring them to me. Well, where are they?
Forgetting all titles and protocols, Bile blurted out,
How should I know? There's a badger with a sword twice the size of me. There's an army with him, and they're coming this way fast.
Trun's trident prongs prodded the stoat's neck.
Keep your voice down. You and I are leaving here.
He shouted to the horde beasts guarding the doors.
Hold your positions. Stay there. Captain Bile has found Captain Drull and the guard patrols. We're going to fetch them. I order you to hold the doors. We'll be back soon.
But, sire,
Bile protested,
we don't know.
He froze in the silence as the trident pricked his throat.
One more word, and I'll leave you behind with him. Now follow me up to the second level.
Bragalaw waved his paws furiously.
Whoa, mates! Stop your rock throwing and shouting, and listen!
The decoy attackers left off their activities. They did not have to strain their ears to know what was going on the other side of Salamandastron's main doors. Screams, roars, yells, and the thunder of eulalias told them that the plan had worked. Lord Broctree and his force had made it, up from the cellars to the entrance. Slaughter was raging unchecked against the vermin that Ungat Trun had deserted. Ruff flung away a rock and grabbed his spear.
To the gates, Meardis! To the gates!
Derby and his crew raced up from the shore, their coats dripping with seawater. Conal shook herself vigorously.
Ain't you lot got inside yet, Brog?
Chuckling, the sea otter skipper dodged a spray of water.
Oh! Don't fret yourself, missy. We soon will be.
The otter maid pointed seaward.
Then you'd best be making it quick, mate. Karankul and his crews cut out the burning ships and sunk 'em. But they caught sight of us and they're hard on our rudders. See?
10 galleys were being rowed to land, crammed with horde crew vermin, led by Karankul. Brog issued hasty orders.
Drucko, bang on them doors as if your life depended on it, 'cause it does. Form up in 4 lines, mates, backs to the doors, slings, arrows, and javelins. Stir your stumps!
Sounds of battle, loud and wild, rang out from behind the doors. The ships plowed into the shallows, and armed vermin began leaping ashore in droves. Drucko battered the door, a rock in either paw, bellowing with all his might,
Brock! Brock! Open up, mate! We're hard-pressed out here!
Karankul stood on the prow of his vessel, urging the vermin on toward the mountain.
Slay stream dogs! They fire their ships! Kill all beasts!
Ungat Trun tore driftwood and sacking from a narrow window facing east on the second level. He peeped out and saw a small band of squirrels below. The wildcat nodded, smiling at Captain Bile.
We're lucky, my friend. It's all clear. Out you go.
2 arrows took the stoat before he cleared the window. Trun spoke up in a voice loud enough to be heard from below.
'Tis no use, mates. The foe beast's waiting below. Round to the south side, quick. I know a good place there.
He stood perfectly still and waited a short time. When he looked out again, the squirrels had run off to cover the south face. With all the litheness of a wildcat, Ungat Trun descended to the ground. Treading contemptuously on Bile's carcass, he set off north toward the cliffs. Once the vermin were above the tide line, Brog gave the first rank of archers their order.
Now!
8 vermin fell, transfixed by flying arrows. The rest paused, but Karankul drove them onward from his ship's prow.
Rush them! They be only few to us!
They continued the charge. The archers dropped back to reload as Brog gave a command to the slingers who took their place.
Shoot and fall back, mates! Now!
Drucko foamed at the mouth as he pounded on the doors.
Open up! A forward slaughter fight! Open up, Brock!
Ruff took out a front runner with a well-aimed rock.
Too late, mate. We'll just have to go down fighting.
Brog judged the distance between himself and the charging vermin. It looked as if Ruff was right. The sea otter's skipper brought forward his spears and javelins.
Kneel here in line, mateys. Points to the fore. Archers, place yourselves between the spears. Right now!
Another deadly hail of shafts buzzed through the night air. Vermin fell, but they kept coming, their own front ranks unshouldering bows and fitting shafts to strings. With a creak and a groan, the mighty doors swung inward. Baron Drucko fell face down, still pounding with his two rocks at the earth in the open gateway. Girth and Bucko Big Bones poked their heads around the doors.
"Welcome to ye mounting, sirs. Do you come in now?"
"Ach, my bairns, ye'll catch your death of errors standing ruined out there."
They piled in regardless, ears over tails in a jumble, and the great doors slammed shut in the vermin horde's face. Lord Brocktree put aside his battle blade. The badger's eyes were red as flame on winter's eve. His huge chest rose and fell as he approached the otters, stumbling over the carcasses of vermin who would fight no more. He stood silent a while, striving to control a blood wrath which coursed like wildfire through his veins. Brog and Ruff took a step backward from the fearsome sight. Brocktree shuddered violently, as if trying to rid himself of a phantom foe. Then he held both paws wide, bowed his head, and spoke in a normal tone,
"This is my mountain. Welcome to Salamandastron."
35. Morning was well underway, warm and still under a powdery blue sky. Ungat Trun had traversed the cliff tops for most of the night, searching for the massive horde beasts he had sent to investigate the fire to the north. Only now had he found them. Telltale spirals of smoke marked their campfires in an area between the dunes and the cliffside. Still carrying his trident, the wildcat padded silently down to where Rip Fang, his brother Doomai, and some other former sea rats were cooking things in their shields over the flames. Catching sight of Trun, they started to stand to attention, but he waved them back down with a few flicks of his paw. Seating himself between Rip Fang and Doomai, he turned to the more intelligent of the two, showing neither anger nor anxiety.
"So, Rip Fang, I don't see captives or the slain bodies of Bark Crew creatures. Nor do I see as many horde beasts as left the mountain last night. What happened?"
Taking his time, cleaning a morsel of food from his single tooth with a knife point, Rip Fang coolly pushed across a shield containing a form of stew in its curved bowl.
"You must have been trapping half the night, boss. Here, have a bite of breakfast."
The food did not look very appetizing, but it smelled good. Trun picked up a clean seashell, scooped some up and tasted it, nodding agreeably.
"Not bad at all. What is it?"
"When we was chasing after Fregorl, we found clumps of charlock growing everywhere, and stonecrop too, sir,"
Doomai explained proudly.
"There was a little stream of sweet water with tutsin sprouting round it. Got some periwinkles and mussels off in the rocks below the tide line as well. So we cooked them all up together. Tasty, ain't it? Wish we had some pepperwort, though. I likes pepperwort."
Ungat Trun cut him short, his voice calm and reasonable.
"Very resourceful of you. But Rip Fang, why were you chasing after my Grand Fregorl?"
"Well, it was like this, see, Captain. Fregorl was with the band who was supposed to head out along the shore and circle back behind the enemy. But sink me, if in that treacherous ferret didn't just carry straight on going."
The wildcat was hungry. He scooped up more of the mess.
"You mean she deserted?"
"The very word, Captain. Deserted. Aye. And she took a third of our force with her. Went like a flight of swallows flying south. But of course, they headed north. We did like you said, closed in on that big bonfire, but there wasn't hide nor hair of any beast there. Just a fire.
Knowing how you'd feel about old Fregoral taking off with your soldiers like that, we tried to track her down, but they was long gone.
Trun tossed away the shell and wiped his mouth.
I see. Thank you, my friends. You were both faithful and trustworthy servants. I'll reward you well when the time comes. But for now, we'd best get back to the mountain.
The mountain, eh?
There was a hint of irony in Rip Fang's tone.
How are things going back there, Cap'n?
Rip Fang gulped as the trident prongs went either side of his paw. Pressing down, the wildcat pinned the sea rat firmly to the sand. Rip Fang was immediately regretting the dangerous game of disrespect he had started. Ungat Trun's gold-ringed eyes blazed savagely.
Let's go back and see, shall we? I trust you are still loyal to my cause, Rip Fang, that you swear to follow and serve me. Or perhaps you'd like to stay here.
Rip Fang knew what the fearsome wildcat meant by the phrase, stay here. He averted his eyes from the murderous gaze.
Loyal? Me and me brother are loyal to you, sire. That's why we signed up with you in the first place. You lead and we'll follow your sire. True blue and never fail. Soon as you let me have me paw back, sire.
The trident lifted, releasing Rip Fang's paw. Trun smiled.
Good. Get the columns ready to march, Captain.
They took to the cliff tops, where the going was faster, Ungat Trun at the rear, his captains at the front. The brother sea rats held a muttered conversation as they marched at double speed.
Did you see his eyes, Rip? Latin's mad. Stark staring mad. Oh, no, he ain't, Doom. Dangerous eye, but not mad. Something strange has happened back at the mountain. Whatever 'twas, it brought Trun out searching for us all through the night. I don't like it, mate. Not one little bit.
Maybe we should have run for it, like Fregoral did?
You're right, Doom. Too late for that now, though.
So what do you think we should do, Rip?
I don't know, but I'll think of something.
Well, hurry up and think, will you?
Shut up. How can I think with you blathering down me here?
So that's all the thanks I gets for cooking your breakfast. Well, keep your ideas. I can think of ideas too, you know.
Ha! You can think of ideas? Who told you that? Your brain's got a full-time job just figuring out how to put one paw in front of the other, so you can march.
Doom Eye purposely stamped on Rip Fang's paw.
Youch! Watch where you're treading, you great lolloper!
Doom Eye's smile was full of malicious innocence.
Sorry, Rip. Me brain mustn't have been figuring right.
Lord Brocktree had ordered the mid-level windows and arrow slits to be opened. Now his creatures stood at every aperture, well-armed and vigilant. Dotty and the twins took their lunchtime snack gratefully from the Gwasom cooks and placed it on the windowsill. As they ate, the Badger Lord halted his inspection of the defenses to chat with them while he took his meal. No sign of Ungat Trun yet, miss?
Sorry, sir. The blighter hasn't shown up yet. You think he will? Perhaps the rascal's scarpered, what?
Brocktree shook his great striped head.
No chance of that, I'm certain. He'll be back. This isn't finished yet.
Look at those vermin below. They've completely surrounded the mountain, yet there's not been a single slingstone or arrow from them. That fox, Karangul, he's sitting on the sand just waiting. Waiting for orders, if I'm not mistaken. Doesn't want to make a wrong move. Southpaw and Bob Weave guffawed.
Ha ha! The wrongest move old Trun ever made was stealing your mountain, eh, Lord? I'll say, the blighter must be a right puddin'head, what? Should have stuck to stealing his grandma's pies.
Brocktree waved a plum slice under their noses sternly. Never underestimate your enemy. I shouldn't have to tell you that. You're supposed to be fighters. The Badger Lord pulled his paw back with half the slice gone. Bob Weave grinned as he chewed.
I never wave scoff near a hare's jolly old mouth. You should know that, sire, what?
Brocktree winked at Dotty, then tripped the hare twin slyly. Bob Weave found himself flat on his back, with the great sword point prodding his stomach lightly. It was the badger's turn to grin. Never steal food from the Lord of Salamandastron. he has a dreadful way of getting it back. You should know that. Dottie and Southpaw fell about laughing as Bobweave wailed,
I say, sir, steady on. You wouldn't chop a chap open to get a measly mouthful back, would you? Rotters, why don't you plead for my bally life instead of rolling around grinning like daft ducks?
Bucko Big Bones fitted an arrow to his bowstring and took careful aim, not wanting to hit the fox sitting on the sands below. It was a skillful shot. The shaft whizzed down, burying itself between the creature's footpaws. The mountain hare's voice rang out,
Good afternoon to ye, Cap'n Karangool, is it? I'm looking down another eerie at ye, so dinna move. Maybe ye canna bring me to mind. I'm Bucko Big Bones, and I remember you weel. Aye, and there's scars on my back, so I'll nae forget ye. Ach, quit trembling, fox. I wouldn't slay ye wi'n error. 'Tis far too quick and clean, ye ken. But don't ye fret, no. We'll be meetin' soon, tooth to tooth, and paw to paw. You've got my sworn promise on that. Off with you now!
Karangool leapt up and ran, four arrows zipping close by before he made the shelter of some rocks and shouted to his archers.
Get him! Middle window, second level, big hair beast! Get him!
Shafts rained through the window space. Bucko stood to one side, smiling grimly. Brog looked up from collecting the fallen arrows.
Ahoy, mate! A spot of trouble?
Ach, no. I was just giving yon fox something to think about. Sort of jogging his bad old memory a wee bit.
Karangool did have a bad old memory. He could not recall, from numerous evil deeds in the past, why the hare was seeking revenge upon him. While he crouched behind the rocks, reviewing his wicked career, Ungat Trun's claws tugged the back of his cloak.
Why are you hiding here, Captain?
Lightness? Not hiding. Waiting for you.
Well, I'm here, as you see. Make your report. I need to know all that has gone on here in my absence.
Stiffener knocked on the Badger Lord's chamber door in the mid-afternoon. Entering, he found Brocktree hurling incense burners from the window. Wiping dust and cobwebs from his paws, the badger looked around.
That's better. I'm sure this chamber wasn't full of muck and spiders in my father's day, eh?
The boxing hare went to the window and stared down at the vermin crowded on the beach. There were even more than before.
You're right, sire. It was always neat and clean, but that's not what I've come here to talk about.
Brocktree sat down on the edge of the bed. I can see that you've got something on your mind, friend. I'm always ready to listen. Speak on, Stiffener. The boxing hare banged his paws down on the sill impatiently.
We've been here most of the night and the best part of the day. When does the fighting start?
Brocktree joined him at the window and placed a paw about Stiffener's shoulders.
You're a brave beast, Stiffener, medic. A truly perilous hare. One of the true sons of Salamandastron. But you've only got to look out of its window to see that the foe still has far superior numbers to our small force. When we set out from Bucko's court, I thought I had enough warriors at my back to face any army. But I was not prepared for anything like Trun's hordes. He must have every vermin on the face of the earth here. We have fought with him, wisely, and with the aid of good planning. I could give the signal right now to continue the battle. I'm certain that my friends, brave friends like you, would hurl themselves on the foe with no question or quarter given. Most of you would die, and that's no guess. It's a fact. Hear me. I refuse to sacrifice the lives of good and gallant creatures. Stiffener gnawed on his lip, troubled and puzzled.
But if we stay here and don't fight, Trun ain't about to turn and march away. That murdering wildcat wants Salamandastron as much as you, Lord. What do we do?
Brocktree tapped his head with one paw.
We think, Stiffener. We use our brains. Listen, do you hear?
Strains of music and merriment sounded faintly from the window spaces on the second level, growing louder by the moment. Stiffener was scratching his ears as Brocktree showed him to the door.
"What's going on, sire?"
"Oh, sorry, didn't you know? Go and see young Dottie. She'll explain it all to you. Hurry now, or you'll miss a good feast. That should baffle the Bluebottoms, eh?" Dottie's scheme was simple. To show the starving vermin that there was no shortage of food on her side, nor of courage and good cheer. In short, to dishearten the blue vermin hordes. Lord Brocktree had given the plan his blessing. It gave him time to think of his own solution to the problem, in peace and relative quiet. Down on the shore, the vermin could not help but stare pitifully up at the happy, well-fed defenders. Ungat Trun and Karangul were some distance away, behind the rocks, assessing their own force numbers and laying their own plans. Rip Fang and Dumai were behaving in a most undignified manner for two horde captains. Every time a pie crust or scrap of cheese was tossed from the second-level windows, they joined in the wild scrabble for it. Dottie and her friends gave the impression that there was a limitless amount of food at their disposal. In reality, there was not, but they kept up the pretense perfectly, stuffing down goodies and glugging down cordials, cheerily waving to the gaunt-faced vermin packing the shore. Logalog Gren even sang a song about nice things to eat, which had the vermin drooling. Gwasom cooks burned branches of aromatic herbs used in their cooking, and the scent drifted downward, adding to the faux beast's distress as Gren sang,
"I won't eat pie or puddin' filled with grass and roots. For me, a tart's a good'un, with ripe, plump, juicy fruits. Take some cherries and blackberries, honey so thick and sweet, in golden crust all fit to burst. Aye, that's the stuff to eat, mates, that's the stuff to eat. Say nay who can to mushroom flan, all baked with onion sauce, unless you think 'tis better than a crisp green salad course. Sup cider pale or nut-brown ale. Oh, isn't lunch a dream? Surrounded by an apple pie with lots of meadow cream, mates! Lots of meadow cream!"
A hollow-cheeked rat gave a strangled sob. Fitting an arrow to his bow, he shouted insanely,
"Ah-ha-ha-ha! I can't stand it no more, I tell you! I'll stop 'em singing, just you see if and I don't!"
Dumai grabbed the shaft from the crazed rat's bowstring and caught the unlucky vermin a hefty kick which sent him sprawling.
"You ain't been given no orders to attack. Don't dare go shooting at those creatures. They're chucking vittles down to us."
A bitter-faced ferret laughed mirthlessly.
"Vittles? You call those vittles? A few scraps of cheese and some crust of pie and bread? Cha!"
Rip Fang shoved a cutlass under the complainant's snout.
"Shut your scringing gob. Any vittles is good vittles when a beast's starving."
Gurr threw down an apple, with only one bite out of it. Rip Fang went after it, flaunting his authority.
"Hoy, put that down. I saw it first. Gimme that apple. I'm your cap'n, and that's an order, you hear?"
Toward evening, Brocktree put in an appearance and called a halt to things. One or two of the hares, Dottie included, seemed puzzled by his decision. The Badger Lord ordered the second-level openings to be closed. "Come to the dining hall. I have an announcement to make." They completed blocking the window spaces with much speculation.
"Dorothea, what do you think Big Brock has to say?"
"Dunno, old chap. Your guess is as good as mine, what?"
"You think he's going to start the final battle?"
"Who knows? We're far too outnumbered, I reckon."
"True, but we're in the best position. We hold the mountain."
"Aye, but think, we could end up in the same blinkin' boat as the vermin, under siege and starvin', if the war takes any time at all."
"Brr, why don't us'ns just go to e hall and listen to what Zer Brock be wantin' to tell us?"
Brogalaw led off, patting Gert's back.
"Ha ha! There speaks a wise cove, eh, bucko? Aye, you can't argue with mole logic."
Leaning on the hilt of his great sword, The Lord of Salamandastron waited until the hum of voices died away before explaining his plan. They say the only way to kill a snake is to cut off its head. Ungat Trun's blue vermin are the snake. He is its head. Without him, they are leaderless. Tonight, I am sending out a challenge to Trun, which should settle this conflict. I will meet him face to face, claw to paw, and tooth to fang in combat to the death. An immediate hubbub broke out. Dottie jumped up beside the badger, silencing them in her severest manner.
Will you be quiet this instant, please? Such bad manners, behaving like a horde of vermin, bad form.
Baron Drucko's loud grumble echoed around the hall.
Ain't we entitled to no opinion?
The hair maid shot him a frosty glare.
You certainly are, sir, but only after his lordship has had his say. Then we'll elect a spokesbeast to represent us all. I vote that'll jolly well be me.
Amid the laughter which followed, the hare twins cried out,
Well said, Miss Dottie. Capital idea, what? I second that old chap. Motion carried without argument.
Drucko's response was a shout which all heard.
Oh, all right. Long as she don't start singing.
Withdraw that remark, sir, or step outside with me. What? Not before he steps outside with me. I'll box his ill-mannered spikes flat.
Brocktree's booming voice silenced every beast.
Stop this silly quarreling, or I'll stop it for you!
An immediate hush fell. The Badger Lord continued. There will be no arguments or opinions about this. It is my decision, as your leader. Tomorrow at noon, I will meet Ungat Trun out on the shore in front of this mountain. There will be no quarter given or asked, and a free choice of weapons. Having said that, I do not expect for one moment that the Wildcat will obey any rules. He did not get as far as he has by being a fair-minded creature. So, to guard against any treachery, I will make my own arrangements with you so that the proper precautions are taken. Dottie, will you and Stiffener see to the guard patrols for tonight? Ruff, Gren, Brogalaw, Drucko, and Girth, come to my chamber. Those of you not on sentry, get a good rest. You will need it to stand you in good stead tomorrow. A blazing javelin whipped out of the mountain, cutting a fiery trail through the night. It buried its point in the damp sand below the tide line, extinguishing the flaming tip. Weasel Captain Bargut plucked the weapon from the sand and carried it to the rocks, where Ungat Trun was still in conference with Karangul.
Mightiness, this came from the mountain. I think there is a message tied to it.
Taking the javelin, Trun dismissed Bargut. He slit the twine, holding the scroll to the weapon's middle with one razor-sharp claw. Karangul watched the wildcat as he scanned the parchment which had been rolled around the haft. Ungat Trun's shoulders began shaking. At first, the fox thought his master was suffering an attack of ague. Then he realized Ungat Trun was laughing, a sight no creature had ever beheld. The wildcat made no sound, but his eyes narrowed to slits, and his mouth curved up at either end, his whole body quivering convulsively.
Everything comes to the beast who waits, eh, Karangul?
Mightness?
Here I am, trying to think of a way to accomplish my plan, when the stripe dog unwittingly solves it all for me.
Good news, eh, Mightness?
Better than you'd think. Much better. Come, follow me.
Ruff put his eye to a crack in the wood of a window shutter, peering at the approaching shapes.
Well, they're coming, Brock. Oh, bunch of the blue scum.
Can you see Trun with them, Ruff?
Not so far, mate. Hang on.
Aha! I sees the cat now, but just a glimpse. That un's taking no chances. He's well shielded by three ranks of guards. Shields up, too.
The group halted within hailing distance. Trun's shout rang out from between the ranks.
I received your message, Stripe Dog.
Brocktree's sharp growl answered.
Well, cat, do you agree to the terms? How could I not agree? The one left standing takes all. But can I trust you to honor your word?
I am a badger lord. My word is my life and honor.
Good. I am Ungat Trun the Conqueror. I too will pledge you my word. I will respect your terms.
Tomorrow, then, when the noon is high, we will meet there, where you stand upon the shore at this moment.
Then I will look upon your face, striped dog.
And I will look upon yours, cat.
Not for long. I will close your eyes forever.
You waste your breath on idle threats. Go away, cat.
There followed a moment's silence, broken once or twice by outraged growls from the wildcat. Ruff returned to his spy hole in the shutter and peered out.
Looks like they're gone, Brock.
Instinct guided Brocktree to the rift in the rock wall of his bedchamber. Moving the bed, he ran his paw along the crack. About halfway down, he found the widening where both his paws fitted. Only a beast with the strength of a badger could move the slab. Corded sinews stood out against bunched muscles beneath Brocktree's fur. Knowing that other badgers had done this before him, it gave Brocktree much pleasure to unleash his own raw power. The slab seemed to groan, then it moved inward, unable to resist his might. Though he had never been in the secret place of badger lords before, Brocktree felt at home there, his mind familiar with it. Fetching a lantern from his bedchamber, he traced the lines of carving which told the mountain's history, the legacy left him by the mummified figures of past badger rulers. Earthrun the Gripper, Spear Lady Gorse, Blue Stripe the Wild, Sita Ruler the Just. He stared sadly at the place which stood unoccupied. His father, Lord Stonepaw, had been denied the right of taking his place there. From the bedchamber he carried through the big chair. It was almost like a rough throne. This had been his father's. He could feel it. Placing it in the space, he sat down. There was a heap of dark powder on a ledge, and he reached for some. It smelled like strange herbs, dried and crushed. A faint memory of a scent like this came to him. Brocktree sprinkled some in the lantern's air vent. Leaning back in his father's chair, he closed his eyes and inhaled. It was an ancient fragrance, autumnal woods, faded summers, a winter sea and soft spring evenings. Badgers came and went through the crossroads of his mind, some dim and spectral, like those who had gone before, others light and ethereal, as if yet unborn. There was even a strong, fearless mouse, bearing a beautiful sword, every bit as great a warrior as the badgers who roamed through his dreams. Battles were fought beneath forgotten suns. Ships ranged the heaving seas through lightning-torn skies. Armies marched dusty paths, comrades in arms singing lustily. Brocktree's dream world turned through seasons of famine and feast, maidens singing, babes playing happily, silent lakes, chuckling streams, flower-strewn bowers, and fruit-laden orchards. Then the tableau changed. Deserted caves, burning dwellings, vermin driving enslaved creatures over the slain members of their friends and family. Blood, war, misery, suffering. And finally, the face of a wildcat he had not yet looked upon, Ungat Trun. The once fragrant aroma became bitter in Lord Brocktree's nostrils, and he awoke shouting,
"No! It shall not happen! Do you hear me, cat? No!"
Smearing a flat rock with vegetable oil, the badger lord began to put an edge to either side of the broad blade. Never having been a singer, he recited the ancient lines of a badger's sword song as he worked. "My blade, like winter's cold, doth bite. Come, guide me, badger lord, for truth and justice we must fight. Wield me your battle sword. Defend the weak, protect the meek. Take thy good comrade's part. Thy point, like lightning, send to seek the foe beast's evil heart. Eulalia loud, like thunder cry, be thou mine eyes and brain. We join in honor, thee and I, to strike in war again." Ungat Trun had singled out his best ship and moored it at the fleet's south edge, close to shore. Closeted in the main cabin with Korangul, Rip Fang, and Dumai, he laid further plans. The Wildcat was a beast who left nothing to chance, and now that the moment was close, he took precautions by covering all angles.
"I need an archer, the very finest bow beast, one who never misses. Is there such a creature in my hordes?"
Brimming with confidence, Rip Fang replied,
"Look ye no further, Captain. My brother Dumai can pick off a butterfly on the wing, and I'd take me oath on that. You ain't never seen a beast living that can fire off a shaft like old Dumai here. Ain't that right, mate?"
Dumai tapped the bow and quiver he always carried.
"I'm the best, mighty one. You can count on me."
Trun's tail curled out and drew him close. Dumai's paws quivered as he gazed into the Wildcat's savage eyes.
"Fail me, and I'll make sure you die bit by bit, sea rat. Now, here's what you must do. Climb the mountain tonight, letting no beast see you. Find a spot where you can command a good view of the combat. If the fight is going against me, kill the badger. Go now. Take your brother with you. And make sure you find a good hiding place. Be certain none see you."
When the pair had departed, Trun gave Korangul his instructions.
"You are certain this is our fastest vessel?"
"Yeah, mightiness. She sailed faster than wind."
"Then crew this ship with your best creatures, and be ready to make sail on the noon tide. If all goes wrong, I will need to get away from here with all haste. Understand?"
"Mightiness, she be ready, waitin'."
Korangul was trapped by the bulkhead. He could move no further back as the trident points prodded his chest.
"Make sure she is, my friend, or you will curse the mother who gave birth to you."
Trun left then, to go aboard his own ship and spend the remainder of the night in his more luxurious stateroom. Hidden behind some hatch covers, Rip Fang and Dumai waited until the Wildcat was gone. Korangul, still rubbing his chest, ushered them into the cabin.
"You hear what Trun say?"
Rip Fang's face was the picture of wicked indignation.
"Every word, mate, every word. So, his mightiness is feared that it might all go wrong. I never thought I'd hear Trun talking like that. We don't want to be siding with no beast who's got the idea he might be a loser."
Dumai's head bobbed up and down in agreement.
"You're right, Rip. Let's up anchor and get away from it all right now. Us three could sail this craft easily."
Korangul preened his brush thoughtfully.
"No, best we stay, hear me? If Trun be losing, you shoot the stripe dog, yeah. Then you kill Trun also. Us three be lords then, we take all."
"But what if that stripe dog slays Trun right off? That'd knock all the fight out of our ord beasts. What then, eh?"
Korangul produced two brass hoops from his cloak. He threaded them through the holes in his ears and smiled.
"Ah, then you get off mountain fast. I be waiting, crewed up for sail. We forget this place. Go piratin' again."
Rip Fang did a little jig of delight, rubbing his paws.
"Ho, ho, ho, ho! Ain't you the one, Cap'n? We're with yer."
Dottie and her friends were laying a few plans of their own at that very moment. Gran had the floor.
"When our badger lord goes out there to face Trun tomorrow, he'll have enough on his mind. Now, I know Brock's given us our orders, but there ain't no reason why we shouldn't make double sure of things. Trun knows nothing of honor. That cat can't be trusted. Take my word for it, mates."
Brog nodded his agreement wholeheartedly.
"You're right, Gran. So, what's the scheme?"
Gran turned to Dottie.
"Tell them, miss."
The hair maid outlined the plan she and the shrew had devised.
"Right, listen up, chaps. Gran and Draco will stay inside the mountain. They'll have the Gwasim, the Rabble Hogs, and Juka's tribe with them. Slings and bows cover every window and arrow slit. I'll be outside with our force of hares and otters.
We'll push in close to the place of combat, make two rough circles, more or less back-to-back, fully armed, of course. That way we'll be able to watch the vermin and keep an eye out for trickery. If Lord Brock gets hurt, we'll surround him and drag him back into the mountain, where Gran'll be waiting to barricade the main entrance once we're inside. But if our badger slays the cat, this is the counterplan. Bucko will give out with a loud eulalia to Gran. She'll lead her forces outside and try to circle the Bluebottoms. With a bit of luck, we'll have them both ways, us in the middle, the rest at their backs. Not a word to Brocktree now. He thinks he's going to carry the day by whacking Tron alone.
Girth waved a digging claw airily. Her, and so we will. There bain't no warrior like Zer Brocko. Boy, okey, there bain't. But us'ns be keeping watch on e vermints, one way or t'other. Boy, old dad allus says, count e digging claws if in you'm shaking paws with e vermint. Bucko Big Bones looked up from honing his javelin point.
Ach, your old feyther's a bra rock o' sense, my friend. Off tay your beds, my bairns. 'Tis after midnight, you ken.
Ruff shouldered a long-bladed sword.
I'll take first watch with the night sentries. Good night to ye all, and good victory tomorrow, mates.
Thank'ee, sir. Oi bidden ye good night, too.
Good night, Miss Dottie. Pleasant dreams, what? Don't grub too many vermin in your slumbers. It can be jolly tiring, you know. Good night, Grandpa Stiff.
Night, you two. I'll give ye a call at dawn. Aye, you can call me and Drucko, too, if you please. And bring us a wee tray of breakfast, old pal.
Any beast not on the breakfast line by dawn will be fighting on an empty stomach. Did you hear that, Mr. Big Bones? I say, log-a-log, Grandmarm, can I have Bucko's scoff if he's not there, what?
You'll get what you're given, Troby. There'll be little enough to go round as it is, after what you put away this afternoon.
Amid the good-humored joshing, they filed off, some to bed, others to guard posts, laughing and joking. However, every beast knew that at noon of the next day the merriment would cease, temporarily for some, permanently for others. 36. Lord Brocktree of Brockhall unshouldered his great sword and strode into the sandy arena. Behind him the sea lay calm, like a glittering mirror. He breathed deep and stood ready, clad only in a loose green tunic, a broad woven belt circling his waist. Dottie and her friends jostled their way roughly through the blue-furred vermin. Trampling paws and knocking aside weapons, they pushed their way to the inner fringe of the wide sandy circle. It was hot. Golden noon sun blazed down out of a cloudless blue sky. Standing at the western edge of the ring, Dottie felt herself shoved to one side as Ungat Trun prowled into the place of combat. A tremor of apprehension ran through the hair maid. The wildcat was a barbarous sight. His pointed ears could be seen through the slits of a round steel helmet with a spike on top and a shoulder-length fringe of fine chainmail. He wore a purple tunic topped by a copper breastplate. Above his paws were metal bracelets with spikes bristling from them. In one paw he carried the big trident, in the other a woven net edged with metal weights. Silence fell upon the packed shore, a quietness that was almost unearthly in its intensity. Lord Brocktree came to the center of the arena. Lifting the sword level with his face, he saluted his enemy in the traditional manner of a beast about to do combat. But salutes, rules, and formalities did not figure in Ungat Trun's nature. A screeching growl ripped from his throat, and he charged.
Kerrang!
Metal struck metal as the badger met his rush. The sword slammed down between the tines of the trident, shockwaves running through the paws of both beasts. Digging in their footpaws, they bent to the task of trying to push one another backward. Both were huge male animals in their prime, well-matched. Brocktree allowed himself to be thrust back a pace, then he retaliated with a roar, sending Trun skidding across the ring, plowing two furrows in the sand. Suddenly, the wildcat whipped the net about his opponent's footpaws, catching the badger unawares and crashing him to the sand.
Rip!
The sword came thrusting and slicing through the net meshes, its point punching a hole in Trun's breastplate. He let go of the net and danced backward. Brocktree tore the net from his body and came after his adversary, whirling it. He flung the net, and Trun leapt to one side, the metal weights whacking his side painfully as it sailed by. He stabbed downward in an attempt to lame Brocktree, but the badger shifted swiftly, an outside prong tearing the side of his footpaw. Ignoring the wound, he stamped down on the trident, trapping it against the ground. Flicking up the huge sword, he laid Trun's right paw bare to the bone. Trun fell down, but only to grab the net. Whirling it about his paw, he came up, battering the badger's face with the weights. They broke and circled, the trident probing, the sword seeking. Then the net shot up, enveloping Brocktree's head, followed by a paw full of sand, which the wildcat flung into his eyes. Trun had no time to stab, so he hit Brocktree hard on the side of his head with the trident butt. The badger fell heavily, blinking and trying to rip the meshes from his face. Trun raised the trident for the kill, but the badger rolled over. Folding his body into a curled-up position, Brocktree hauled sharply on the net, and Trun stumbled forward, his back bent. As he fell toward Brocktree, the badger lashed out with his uninjured footpaw, smacking it into the wildcat's nose with a sickening thud. Trun fell backward. Brocktree struggled upright, tearing himself free of the net, and quickly pawed the sand from his eyes. From flat on his back, Trun beheld his foe bearing down on him, sword upraised. He shoved the trident out in front of him to counter the weapon's swing, and Brocktree's battle blade sheared right through one of the thick, barbed copper prongs, which zinged off skyward. Dumai fitted the shaft to his bowstring.
Time for the striped dog to die. Trun's flat on his back.
He drew back the seasoned yew bow to its limit, and sighting expertly down the arrow, he fired. The force of the blow, which had severed Trun's trident prong, took Brocktree a staggering pace forward, but he whirled and straightened so quickly that the arrow, which would have pierced the base of the badger's skull from behind, thwacked through his left shoulder. Rip Fang clapped a paw to his brow.
Idiot! You missed!
End of Side 8. Change side selector switch. This book is continued on the next cassette.